In those deals, one thing we've seen is that the mix of consideration has been very heavily weighted towards equity, sometimes all equity, and then sometimes there's some cash element as well. And one major reason for that is just to kind of share the valuation risk for the acquisition, both from the acquirer and also from the target's perspective. Another key feature that you see in this industry is just very material tax attributes, right? And thinking about how those attributes play into the valuation of the respective companies. You might have very significant NOLs from drilling CapEx that's been incurred for developing the property, both on the target and acquirer side. And to the extent that one of the parties has significant cash flows or in a tax-paying position, they've churned through most of their NOLs and other attributes, then the value ascribed to those could be even greater, right? And so there's a modeling exercise that goes into figuring out how much value those attributes will bring into each entity's equity. Tax considerations, I think for consolidation, right, you could spend like a month talking about the tax issues because they'll just vary so much based on the different tax profiles of the companies. You could have partnership deals, asset deals. Here we're talking about public company deals, or other corporate stock deals. And so we've highlighted a few, but I think really it just depends very much on the tax profile and what the specific nuances are for both the acquirer and the target. Tax-free reorganization provisions, right? So we talked about the trend towards equity weighting and where there's a significant equity portion to the transaction, it might qualify as a tax-free reorg. With the IRA, obviously, the Section 4501 excise tax can also come into play to the extent that there is cash boot received in an acquisitive reorg. And so, people typically view that as a deal cost that just kind of comes along with it after 4501. But there are also some potential planning techniques that can be considered to, look at whether that excise tax can be reduced as part of the transaction. So 382 is very important where, either the target or acquirer have material tax attributes. I mentioned before that the whole equity stacking in the deal and how those tax attributes come into play in valuing the company. Obviously, a material Section 382 limitation could reduce the value of those attributes, and so that could be just for the target. It could be for the acquirer. It could be for both, depending on what their history looks like and whether they've also had recent equity transactions in the past few years. Just as a recap, an ownership change can occur when there's more than 50% change in ownership within a 3-year testing period. So if either the acquirer or target has had prior transactions, this could tip them over the edge. And finally, I think one more thing to just mention in the 382 context that we've seen come up somewhat recently is with all of the volatility in the industry, distress, some of these companies are emerging from bankruptcy, and they might have very material tax attributes that they're trying to protect and value. And as part of that bankruptcy transaction, they might have opted to apply 382 L5, right, where they're not required to apply a Section 382 limitation when they emerge from bankruptcy to their attributes. But in exchange for that, they're required to reduce their NOLs for an interest haircut for interest deducted in the last 3 years. If that happens and there's an ownership change within 2 years of emergence, the second ownership change can cause that 382 limitation to be reduced to zero. So that can be, a very material effect on values, right? And something, as you're looking at potential targets or you're, potentially a target of something, to think about how 382 L5, if it's applicable, could impact valuations. So a couple of other structures that John mentioned that we'll talk about. As we've seen very tight credit markets, companies are looking for ways to access capital to fund drilling and development costs for their properties. You know, two of those structures that we see come up and people are, you know, thinking more and more about them are DrillCo structures and cash and carry deals. So for the first one, the DrillCo structure, you know, that would typically involve, you know, a working interest owner and operator and a financial investor, where the financial investor would come in and commit to fund a portion or all of the drilling costs for some specified number of wells. And this could be, you know, specified in stages or in potential tranches that are pretty tightly controlled between the parties. In exchange for that, the financial investor would receive a working interest in the property. Oftentimes, you might also see the working interest owner receive cash as well in the transaction. And a hallmark of the DrillCo structure is the reversion feature, where the investor on day one might receive, let's say, an 85% working interest in the property in exchange for the commitment to fund, you know, maybe 100% of the drilling costs, and the operator would retain a 15%, you know, carried interest in the property. But once the financial investor receives a return of the capital that put in, plus some specified IRR, you know, 12%, 14%, after that, there would be a reversion of the working interest. So the ownership would flip back to the operator so that the operator would own an increased interest in the property, and the financial investor's working interest would be significantly reduced.